Hey, what's going on there, Warriors? Jeff here from Warrior Life, and welcome to podcast episode number 463. So the last several months, I've been getting schooled by a couple of my range buddies who are former SEALs on the art and science of long-range precision rifle shooting. And I am hooked. But I'm definitely still a noob, and while I'm not doing too shabby with my Remington 700 Tactical 308 rifle, it kind of looks like a Nerf gun compared with like their tricked out custom built pea shooters. Now, I'm not so green that I feel like some Jordache designer sniper rifle is going to make up for bad technique, but let's face it, the rifle does kind of play a little bit of a part in your ability to reach out and touch a bullseye at 1,000 yards and beyond. So this week I had a chat with the master long range precision rifle instructor from Ghost Ring Tactical to give all of us noobs some detailed tips on getting started with the right rifle, the right accessories, and the right way to start training for those really long shots. Now, this episode is loaded with specifics that you're going to want to grab something to take notes, or you can just grab this week's handy one-page cheat sheet covering all the main points. You can download it absolutely free, along with our other cheat sheets and a bunch of other training goodies from our Loot Locker section of our website just by going to warriorlife.com/loot. And now, let's talk tactics.
Tactical firearms training. Urban survival. Close quarters combat. Welcome to the show that helps you better prepare for any threat you may face in your role as a protector and a patriot. This is the Warrior Life Podcast.
All right, from the looming threats of a wide-scale electrical grid blackout to an economic collapse and everything in between, for those of us who are prepping to be more self-reliant, it's not hard to imagine a world turned upside down and the chaos that's born out of it. Now, when life as we know it changes, practically overnight, the supply lines that our society as a whole depends upon, just for our basic needs to survive, will be shattered, and citizens will be forced to fend for themselves for food, water, and security in a new reality where there may be no grocery stores for food, no running water for staying hydrated, and no law enforcement or other security presence to keep the rule of law intact. This world is why we prep in the first place. And one of the ways that we prepare for these scenarios is by arming ourselves with one or more weapons that we can use to provide for ourselves and our families and protect us from the desperate masses of the unprepared who could be a threat to our stockpiles and our safety. Now, for most people, any kind of firearm is going to come in handy for keeping you and your loved ones safe. But for those looking to take their arsenal and their skills to the next level, mastering the use of a long-range precision rifle is going to be an extremely valuable tool to have in your toolbox. Now, with the right equipment and a little bit of practice, your long-range shooting accuracy has the power to keep potential threats at bay from a much greater distance than traditional firearms, as well as give you better odds at a successful hunt to help keep yourself and your loved ones fed. Now, in this week's episode, we're going to be talking about that first important step to mastering the art of long-range rifle shooting, with tips on how to pick the best rifle for your arsenal, as well as what accessories are worth your investment to help you learn faster and shoot more accurately at farther and farther distances. Hey there, Warriors. Jeff Anderson here. Welcome to the Warrior Life Podcast. And with me this week is a new addition to our network who's an expert instructor in long-range rifle. Please welcome Micah No to the program. Mike, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff.
I know you're coming right off the tails of a camp that you just had, so this will be really good. I'm glad you could take a break from all of this. Listen, Micah is new to our network here, but he is a veteran of the U.S. Air Force Combat Search and Rescue Teams with a 5-deployment record to Afghanistan, and now that he's stateside, has gone on to provide training to civilians in defensive pistol and rifle, along with personal protection tactics for concealed carry and home defense. Now, in addition to his firearms instruction, Micah is also a certified SIG armor, a range safety officer, and a USPSA competition shooter. But it's his unique prowess as a long-range shooting instructor that we've got him over here today. So we pulled him away from his head instructor role at Ghost Ring Tactical to help us get started. Now, for more information on Micah and the training that they provide over at Ghost Ring Tactical, please go on over to visit them online at ghostringtactical.com. So Micah, I think to start this topic, which is kind of it's a topic that I think a lot of our people love. They love the idea of being a sniper, right? And I've gone hunting, I've got a rifle made for long range, and I've been recently going to a private shooting range with some buddies of mine. They're Navy SEALs, and we've got a Delta guy there also, CAGS guy. And one of my friends, who is the Navy SEAL, brings his sniper rifle with him. And it's been my first time with like a true precision rifle going out to the range. We've got targets set up there about 500 yards out. And I got to tell you, it's like after he dials everything in, it's almost just like you just touch the trigger. It's like you don't even need any skill. It feels like you don't need any skill. It's like the rifle just does all of the work. And it's just it's great for confidence. It's great for bragging rights. But I know there's more to it. And in fact, in our conversations about it, like all of our friends, it's like if you're just focused in on the rifle, you really don't understand the art of sniping, which I totally understand all that. But all that being said, the rifle is a big component of long-range precision rifle. So for those of us, and I consider myself still in the newbie scenario here. So when someone is looking at picking up a solid, like first level rifle to begin training for long range shooting, and they don't want to break their bank account, what specific features should they be looking for that will help them perform well under harsh conditions? Like the rifle will be reliable, but it can also be built upon with other gear that might be needed for getting it more accurate out at longer distances.
Sure. And you know, these days, pretty much any high quality rifle off the shelf is gonna be durable enough to do whatever you need it to do. I think it's probably my top three things, right? Number one is going to be the caliber that you're going to be shooting, right? What are you shooting at and why are you shooting at it? Things like a 308 and a 6.5 Creedmoor are probably the two most common calibers that we see in any of our classes. They're very capable rounds for self-defense, for hunting, for training. And then next would be the modularity of the rifle. So we'll get into this a little bit more, but whether you're getting a fixed stock or a chassis rifle system is going to play into that. As well, I think lastly will be the fitment, or what's known as the footprint of the rifle. This refers to basically where the screws mount up and sort of the layout of the rifle. There's common footprints like a Remington 700, many other rifles are based off of that footprint. And that comes into the aftermarket parts, where if you have some very specific or unique specialized rifle, it's going to be difficult to find an abundance of components and availability to fit that rifle. So something that's more common, you know, like your Glock 19 for your carry pistol, right? Everybody makes everything for a Glock 19.
So I want to dig into these just a little bit more, because there's definitely some, like, let's talk about the caliber, right? So so mine's a 3.8, and for survival purposes, which is kind of like one of the angles that we're taking it with it here, you know, we always look at like what's availability going to be like. And we've seen even during times, like I remember when the, in Baltimore, when there were, the Boston bombing. They shut down like all of the gun stores in the area. You can buy ammunition anywhere. I mean, it was kind of a strange, odd thing that happened there, but it's certainly not outside of what we might expect in some sort of extreme scenario here. But availability of ammunition is definitely going to be one of the things that we look at. What is the difference between, because a lot of people right now are going toward Creedmoor, and honestly, I don't, I worry. From an outsider's perspective, I worry about kind of the availability of ammunition like that. But, you know, 308 is most likely going to be maybe more common, maybe more easier to find out there. But what is the difference between those rounds? Like, are there any benefits, like pros and cons to a 308 outside of like supply under survival circumstances and a 6.5 Creedmoor?
Sure. So I think one, I think a lot of people's perspective was changed during the pandemic in terms of ammo availability, where, you know, we heard a lot of this, I'm going to have an AK because a 7.62x39 is going to be abundantly available. There was nothing. There was nothing that was abundantly available. So I think that factor needs to be taken into account long before, right? If I'm going to buy this rifle in this caliber, I need to stockpile that ammo, period, point blank. I think so. The biggest differences between a 308 and a 6.5 Creed, the 308 is a larger, heavier bullet. It's capable reliably out to about 700 to 800 yards without getting into some ballistic specifics. You can buy different rounds that are better for the 308 further out. But it's a heavy recoiling round. So for smaller, lighter weight rifles, that could be a problem. Where the 6.5 Creedmoor is a much smaller bullet, but it travels significantly faster than the 308. So it's a flatter shooting bullet, and it doesn't recoil very much, which is why a lot of people like it. It's a very forgiving round, where kind of like you talked about before, where the rifle does all the work, that's your 6.5 Creedmoor. You're going to have to do as much work as your rifle is doing to mitigate and manage a 308 rifle.
Okay. And you were talking about modularity a little bit. Maybe this is something that we get into a little bit later, but I know one of the things that when I'm kind of out there researching, people are looking at like floating barrels and, is it how connected is everything that it's going to be shifted? And we're going to talk about scopes and I want to talk about that separately, but is there anything on modularity as far as like an overview of what that means to people or like somebody that's new to when they're looking at a rifle?
Sure. The analogy I like to use, because everyone mostly drives a car, so we can kind of relate to that, where if you look at your baseline, Ford F-150 work truck, right? Manual windows, manual seats. It's got some adjustability, right? I might be able to tilt the steering wheel. But then you go to the King Ranch bougie top of the line F-150, and that's going to have 9-way adjustable seats, bolster increases, heated this, movable that. Everything's adjustable. I can program all the settings. So think of a rifle the same way, right? An out of the box fixed stock rifle, you have no adjustability. Maybe you might be able to move your scope back and forth on your scope rail, and that's about it. When you start getting into the chassis rifles, you can adjust your cheek height, you can adjust your length of pull, you can adjust all these different aspects. And to stay along that car theme, right? If I'm borrowing a car from a friend, say that Honda Civic, I'm going to get in that car and that seat might be pushed all the way forward and the mirrors might be panned all the way out. I'm going to have to make those adjustments to make that car fit to me. Right. I can drive that car, but I'm going to be scrunched in and moving around and not comfortable, and it's not optimal. I'm going to need to move that seat back, adjust those mirrors to me, and make that car fit me versus trying to fit myself to that car. And we think of rifles in the same way, right? I want to be able to make that rifle fit to me. I don't want to have to compromise myself and my posture and my position to get in behind this rifle properly. I want to be able to set it up to work for me. And that's where a chassis system really comes into play.
That brings up I'd never thought about it like this before, but like, in the military, we had, with fixed iron sights, we had to know what our, when we were zeroing in our rifle, we needed to know what our settings were. That way, if our rifle goes down, breaks, whatever, we can grab another rifle, pick it up. And if we have, like, we can basically get it to a good enough zero just by putting in the number of ticks on front and rear sights that, okay, it's the same platform. Now I've got it back to like where my rifle was. And so it should be more accurate than if I just pick it up and start shooting with it. It would seem beneficial to know what your fit is for your precision rifle also. So I'm thinking like the same circumstances in the military. I mean, I always treat everything like it's the military because, it's the military.
It's
they knew what they
in
were
us
doing.
Over and over and
That's
over.
That's right.
Yeah. We don't have a choice. Yeah.
That's right. But that makes sense though, right? So if it's a survival situation and I grab somebody else's, like I've got a Remington 700, I grab somebody else's, I wonder if it's beneficial to know like how far away, like I don't know yet because it's not like I haven't messed around with any additional settings and everything. And like I said, my friend Gov just puts it down there. It's on the sandbags, touch the trigger, boom, bullseye. But I wonder if it'd be beneficial. I mean, you can speak to this, but if it would be beneficial to know different parts of where you are gripping the rifle, how you hold the rifle, distance away from glass, distance of glasses on, like different things like that. And maybe it's not really set up like that, but I wonder, are there any major components or major factors that can be, interconnected or triangulated or whatever to that I could go to another rifle and get it as close as possible to being accurate, as possible. I guess that's where I would leave it there. Maybe there is no road, you know, there's no road there, but I'm just curious if that would work the same way.
To an extent. So the best way to think about it is, you know, your fundamentals of shooting, right, is really what's going to pay the dividends and make you accurate behind any weapon system, to an extent that that weapon system can be accurate, right? We see all these rifles, sub MOA guarantee out of the box, and we'll get into what that means. But these very, very accurate rifles, most of these rifles are more accurate than the shooters that own them. And so it really comes down to the skills of the shooter that's going to translate into the accuracy of the rifle. So I want to set myself up for the highest level of success. So everything, I want to tweak everything just right for me. Well, if I was to just grab someone's Remington 700 off the ground, or off their shelf or whatever, and take it to the range and get behind it, I may not be initially as accurate as I could be, A, with that rifle, and B, with certainly my rifles that are set up for me. But it's only going to take you a little bit of time to sort of figure out and work around, like, okay, for me, this rifle is shooting just a little high into the right, and I'm going to have to compensate this way, or I'm going to have to make these adjustments in my scope this way, without even undoing scope rings and moving things back and forth. Something as simple as, you know, just building up a little bit of foam on the buttstock to add that proper eye alignment, height alignment, can be ways to do that. And again, with a modular system, I can just unloosen a set screw, move that cheek piece up, and tighten that set screw again, versus if you just handed me, you know, your grandfather's Remington in a nice cherry wood stock, I'm gonna suffer in terms of my accuracy and my ability to employ that weapon system initially, until I kind of figure out how that works for me, and whether or not I can, you know, mitigate that by my posture and position and my shooting fundamentals to make that work better for myself. If that makes sense,
that makes your question. Yeah, that makes total sense. That makes total sense. And you know, being able to improvise and build up, like grabbing foam and making, you know, if you don't have a cheek stock on it, you can build it up. Like having ways that you can do that makes a lot of sense too. You said that pretty much like any like rifle, hunting rifle, anything can be good enough to start with, but you want to look for those things where you can accessorize it and things like that. Are there any things that would make a bad choice for a rifle? Because I wonder now if, you know, with everybody loves, they want to be like the tactical sniper, if there are really bad brands that are being put out there that look really cool, they're pretty badass looking, but maybe don't have the right components of it. Has anybody ever shown up to your training with, look what I got, and it's like the Fisher Price, you know, model of, you know,
right?
Like,
you know, interestingly enough, there are very few brands, and there certainly are brands out there that are, I wouldn't recommend to students to buy. But I think that it's more what we see in class with students is they bring a mispurposed rifle, right? You'll bring a hunting rifle to a precision rifle class. And certainly that rifle will perform within its capabilities, but it's not going to deliver what you're looking for from it in a precision rifle class. So, you know, you look at a hunting rifle, it's going to have a very thin pencil barrel. It's a very lightweight stock because I'm hiking this thing for miles while I'm stalking whatever animal it is that I'm trying to shoot. So I don't want you know, a precision chassis rifle or a PRS rifle that weighs upwards of 40 plus pounds, you know, with this massive scope on it and this bipod, and I'm hauling a tripod in my pack, and I've got, you know, 9 different rear bags that weigh 3 to 4 pounds a piece. That's going to pay me dividends in a precision rifle class because it's going to be really heavy and really stable, and I can prone out that rifle and stay there all day. But for a hunting rifle, it's designed to take 1, maybe 2 shots. So, you know, heating up a barrel isn't necessarily a concern where we start to see accuracy deviations when barrels get warmer. It's built purposely for hunting, for carrying with me to make those 1 or 2 shots, and it's got to count for those 1 or 2 times, right? Versus that, you know, modular precision rifle or, you know, a battle rifle where I'm going to sacrifice maybe some range and I'm also going to sacrifice some mobility, but it's the best of both worlds, kind of somewhere in the middle kind of thing. So I think that's really what we tend to see is people buying the wrong rifle for the intended purpose, not so much a bad rifle.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So, all right. So now that we have a good base rifle, let's start to accessorize this thing. What would be the first accessories that someone should look at choosing to be able to customize their rifle that's going to give them kind of the biggest bang for the buck on the front end?
So I'm very cautious when it comes to this question. And we get this question all the time, right? Like, oh, how can I pimp out this rifle? How can I trick this rifle out? This will be a common theme, is I'm just going to continually harp on the fundamentals of shooting. I can take a mediocre rifle and give it to a very well-established shooter, and they can far out shoot a mediocre shooter with the absolute top of the line best gear, right? So when it comes to the gear and how to upgrade or trick out your rifle, I'm very much about form and function over like Gucci cool. And like, yeah, sure, you can get some cool stuff and it does have some form and function. But for me, number one is I want a bipod. I want a bipod and maybe a rear bag that's going to increase the stability and increase the versatility of that rifle right away. Shooting off of a pack or, you know, a branch or something like that is less than ideal. And I think, too, to think about your upgrades in terms of not just your rifle, but your ability, right? Having a nice, stable rifle platform on a bipod with a rear bag proned out, very rarely are we going to get the opportunity to take that shot in that position, but it's a fantastic position to learn from. It's comfortable, it's stable, it's consistent, and that's going to help me hone my skills so that when I do get to those more untraditional or non-conventional shooting positions, like off of a branch or over a tripod or over a barricade or something like that, my fundamentals are in place. I've already got that established, and now I can make those more difficult shots. So number one, bipod, absolutely. And some sort of a rear bag. And that can be as simple as stuffing a dress sock with some rice or some beans, or you can go all the way up and buy some Gucci gear. Number two, I'm a huge fan of a chassis. I would, if you're going to buy a fixed stock rifle and then you're going to upgrade it, I would buy a chassis for it. We can talk price differences between buying a chassis rifle right off the bat versus buying a fixed stock rifle and then putting it in a chassis. But you get more options picking your own chassis, and it's not necessarily any more expensive. In fact, sometimes it can be cheaper that way. And then lastly, it's kind of a three and a four, but a muzzle brake of some sort or another will certainly help to mitigate recoil and make it a more comfortable and tamer rifle to shoot, again, depending on your caliber. And depending on what type of rifle you're buying from the get-go, a scope rail. You're going to need one. Most of them don't come with any way to attach an optic to that rifle, so you're going to have to get that anyway. So I just threw it in as almost a mandatory upgrade.
Okay. Well, that's a good place to bring it in, I think. So let's talk about the glass. I got to tell you, this is the most confusing aspect of going out there shopping that I've come across. It just seems like there are tons of options for scopes. On the outside, they almost all look exactly the same to me, other than, you know, gigantic, humongous ones that, you know, I can see all the way across the planet and at night, and, you know, aliens. I can see anything with this thing. But a lot of these scopes, they just look the same, but the price tags are all over the place. Like, it's not hard to find a scope that looks badass that is like next to nothing off of just like Amazon. So what? And it was funny because I was just talking with one of my SEAL buddies, and he was saying that he had a guy that brought this really nice rifle with him. And like the scope was like $20 because the guy just didn't think, he's like, I have the rifle. Like the scope is just, it's a reticle. Like I just need to know where to point this thing. So what should shooters be looking for when they are picking out a good scope for a long range rifle?
So again, some more car analogies. You can tell I'm a car guy. but I would not go out and purchase a Ferrari and put Costco tires on it. Right. This is kind of the same deal. Your scope is the only thing that connects you to what you're shooting at and to what you're shooting, which is your rifle. So for me, I would say buy the best glass that you can buy. Another common mistake that we tend to see, and I think you kind of hit on this here with the $25 scope, is that people tend to base their budget on each piece, right? Oh, well, why am I putting a $4,500 optic on a $600 Remington 700? One has nothing to do with the other, right? Each upgrade, if you think about that in terms of itself, an encapsulated item by itself, that's the best way to sort of sort your budget out. The glass just being $4,500, it's $4,500 for its own versus I'm going to be hard pressed to find a $4,500 rifle that doesn't have that diminished return over a $600 Remington. So in terms of the glass itself, that's where a lot of the cost comes in for an optic. And really the only way that you can figure this out for yourself is just go look through them. A lot of big box stores, Cabela's, Sportsman's, Bass Pro Shop, Shields, these types of things will have a decent selection in terms of price points of what's available out there. And I would challenge you, go pick up that, you know, $3,500 Leupold Mark V and pick up the, you know, $125 Cabela's special and have the sales guy walk you out front, which most of them will do, and look through the dang thing. Look around, see what it looks like. Many lifetimes ago, I worked for Best Buy and sold home theater stereo equipment. And everyone asked me, oh, what's the best speaker? Your ears are different than my ears, right? My eyes are different than your eyes. What I see is not what you're going to see. So where you may pick different, I may not, or vice versa, right? I might see things that you don't see. So I think glass is probably the number one thing to look at, and you're not going to see that on the internet. Two, I think, is going to be your magnification and your field of view. How far are you going to shoot, right? A lot of people are limited by the ranges. Like you said, your range is 500 yards. Long range is a subjective term, right? Some people think that 1,000 yards is long range. There are competitions here in New Mexico. We have the King of 2 Mile. These people are shooting to 2 miles and further out, right? Their optic is going to be vastly different than an optic that I have to shoot at my 1,000-yard range here at Ghost Ring. So I think those things, the magnification is going to be something that's determined by what you're doing with that rifle. Again, the purpose behind that rifle. Tube diameter, so how big around the scope actually is. Probably two of the most common is going to be a 30 mil or a 34 mil. Really what that translates into is how much range adjustment you're going to have of that reticle inside the optic and how much light transmission is going to get through that optic to your eyeball. And that's something especially for hunters who are shooting in low light or no light conditions to consider. Reticle, I think, is more of a preference at this point. You know, mil versus MOA, we can kind of talk a little bit more about that specifically, but it really just depends on what you like and how busy you think the reticle is or needs to be. Most days now, I think a tactical, what's known as a tactical milling reticle, so something with lines of demarcation inside that reticle, not just a duplex or a traditional crosshair. I need some way to range targets, and I can't do that without a milling reticle. So not necessarily a mil dot, but an MOA or mil, but some sort of, it looks just basically like a ruler. It's just a measuring device inside my reticle. I think those are probably the two very, very similar things.
So is there a, just for the complete noobs, like MOA versus mil, what the basics of the difference between each of those?
The easiest way to describe it is just two different ways of measuring things, right? We've got inches and we've got centimeters. That's really what it comes down to for mil versus MOA. MOA is a more precise or a more finite unit of measurement than a mil is. They're both angular units of measurement. Traditionally, it was MOA. That's what the military used. And even the military now, from what I understand, it's been a while since I've been in the military, is going to the mil the Milirad reticles over the MOA reticles. But MOA is referenced in measurements and units that we on this side of the pond are used to. So inches, yards, all feet, all these things translate very, very easily and very well into an MOA reticle. Whereas a Milirad reticle is in your centimeters and meters, right? Well, at 100 meters is still 109 yards away, right? It's mm-hmm. it's the same distance away from me. It's just a unit of measure that I'm trying to utilize. So I think the one of the big driving factors is who are you shooting with? What language are they speaking, right? If I'm the only MOA guy in a group of mil guys, I'm kind of going to be behind the power curve. But it's easy enough to learn to speak both languages and translate back and forth. So I think that's going to be the biggest driving factor to mil versus MOA is who do you shoot with and what are they shooting? Who are you trying to learn from? We teach both, right? We teach both languages at Ghost Ring, mil or MOA. And it doesn't take a lot to learn to translate between the two. So beyond that, I think it's really just going to be a personal preference, but right now the market is shifting to mil as the more popular.
So would it be more of an advantage? Like, cause I was like with long range recon and we would do like range cards and we would have, especially for like artillery fire and stuff, we would make a drawing and we would with lasers be able to get the exact range out there. For looking at a map, that's all going to be in meters. So we've got, you know, clicks out there. So if we're using like a topographical map and range cards and lasers and things like that, sounds like it would be a better translation for somebody that's looking at things through the eyes of like a soldier. You're looking at topographical maps. Seems like, is that more of like a one-to-one type?
Okay, yes, exactly, right? I'm not having to go back and forth. And even, you know, when I first got into this game, scopes used to come with a mil optic and MOA turret, right? And that was like, when I bought my very first Leupold Mark IV ERT optic, I had to request special scope caps on my scope from Leupold to make it mil to mil. Like, it didn't make sense in my brain. Like, why would I have two different units of measurement on my optic? But that's how they used to come. And I had to request specially made, they were the M5 turrets from Leupold, and I had to request those special so that my turrets and my reticle would line up, would talk the same language.
Gotcha. All right, cool. All right, so another funny story about what a dumbass I am with long-range shooting is, so I brought my, the last time I was out at the range, I brought my Remington with me, and I got to say, I was hitting pretty well at 500 with what I thought was, you know, I had everything stocked up. I've got a bipod, I've got a back bag, and my CAGS buddy walks up and he started laughing at me. He's like, man, I can't believe you're hitting with that ammo. And he was just kind of laughing at me. And I still to this day, like, I was too embarrassed to even ask him, like, what is it about my ammo? And but obviously I'm shooting beginner ammo for some reason or something. But actually, it was a vote of confidence actually for my rifle that I was even able to hit the target, I guess. But are there any specifics that shooters should be looking for when they're selecting ammunition for the rifle for longer distances?
Absolutely. And you and I share that exact same story because I was shooting, you know, Ukrainian surplus whatever out of my first Remington 700. I'm like, I don't know why I can't hit the broadside of a barn. I guess I'm just not good at this. Ammo is a huge, huge factor in terms of your accuracy. So a few things to think about ammo, right? So we have what's known as the grain, the bullet grain, which is basically just another unit of measurement for weight, right? How much does that bullet weigh? Rifles, in a sense, are a living organism. They tend to like different things. So I had a Remington 700 for myself, and I had built the exact same carbon copy Remington 700 for a good friend of mine. And his rifle liked 175 grain bullets, and my rifle liked 168 grain bullets. And there's, you know, a bunch of science behind this in terms of barrel harmonics and barrel whip and all this other stuff, and, you know, tiny little changes in variables that can affect this. But the grain or the weight of the bullet is going to be something that you're going to have to kind of play around with and see what your gun likes, right? I mean, if you think we'll take the you know, 308, for example, you can get down to, you know, 130, 147 grain bullets for a 308, and you can get up to 225 grain bullets for 308. They're all going to have vastly different performance or ballistic characteristics based on the weight of that bullet, and that plays into the twist rate of the barrel. Without getting into, you know, a lot of the science behind it or the ballistics behind it, your rifle will like a specific bullet. The most common, again, for 308 and 6.5 Creedmoor, for 308 is going to be a 168 grain match grade bullet, and we'll talk about match grade here in just a second. And for that 6.5 Creedmoor, about 140 or 143 grain bullet for those as well. That's a good starting point, and then you can sort of deviate up and down from there to kind of figure out what you're looking for. Next is going to be match grade ammo versus just your plinking ammo, right? Ammo that we're just practicing with. So when you think about match grade ammo and what that means, and this applies again just to your fundamentals of shooting and everything else, is consistency is key. If I can do the same thing the same way every single time, that's going to inherently breed in accuracy. So my bullet is no different. So a match grade round, the tolerances and the standards of manufacture are much higher than just a regular white box plinking ammo. And that's going to help, you know, more consistent muzzle velocity. So that bullet's going to leave your barrel at the same speed or close to the same speed every single time. So if I have a 200 to 300 foot per second variance in the speed of my bullet when it leaves my barrel, that's going to impact where that bullet lands, right? Gravity is a constant and pulls down on that bullet, and a faster bullet is going to spend less time in the air. So if I've got this huge variance between every other round that's leaving my gun, it's going to show on the target at the end. So that's where a match grade round comes in. And yes, they're going to cost more because they're, you know, they spend more time manufacturing. They have higher, not necessarily higher quality parts, but a higher inspection standard, a higher standard for manufacturing for those versus plinking rounds.
So is there a kindergarten version of kind of narrowing it down? Would you recommend starting like with the baseline, like let's say it's a 308, so starting with 168 grain, match grade, like get it as consistent as possible, see how your rifle performs with the standard bullet, and then kind of choose up or down in the grain from there? Or would you go with a different brand, or like where would you go from the standard to see where you know, kind of narrow down which food your rifle likes the best?
Right. Yeah, to an extent, right? And again, it's gonna depend on what standard are you looking for, right? For a precision rifle, you know, match shooter who's out there competing at the highest level, they're going to want some very, very precise ammo. And usually they hand load their own ammo, right? They don't want any more than 2 to 3 feet per second variance in the muzzle velocity and things like that. So what is my standard of accuracy, I think, is the first question you need to ask yourself. If I'm willing to, you know, I want to hit an inch at 100 yards, right? That's a one MOA rifle, is 1 inch at 100 yards. If I can get all of my bullets in that 1 inch square at 100 yards, that's my level of standard. Yeah, that's great. Then go on from there. If you want a half MOA or a quarter MOA, right? Or I just need to be able to hit the heart size target on, you know, some big game, then that's going to determine what's good enough for you, right? Any ammo, and again, this is not going to be, it's, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here. Most match grade ammo is going to be good enough, right? You can fine tune that. And so really what it comes down to is your grouping. So if I shoot a 3 round or a 5 round group at a piece of paper, how close are all of those holes? And I need to be able to account for those flyers that, you know, maybe I induced a nudge into that rifle, or I anticipated a shot and I pulled a round and that's where that round went. So I have to be able to call that. But how tightly can I group those rounds? And that's where the grain of the bullet is going to come in. So if you're shooting an acceptable group for you with a certain grain of ammo, how about it? That's going to be where you need to be. But if you're all over the place, and the big thing here is, one, being able to account for every shot that you take, to be able to call and say, like, ah, that was me. That was not the ammo. That was not the rifle. I absolutely jerked that trigger. Or if you're laying behind that gun and you're doing everything the way that you're supposed to be doing, like, no, my trigger press is fantastic. I'm in my natural respiratory pause. I'm doing all the things that I need to do. And that ammo is all over the place. Then we can start eliminating things one at a time. And this is kind of where it comes into two, is you don't want to change too many things at once. Right. If I'm going out and I'm buying 9 different brands and 18 different grains, I have no idea. It's you know, paralysis by too many choices.
By analysis. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, buy one brand. So, you know, Federal is probably your most common when it comes to 308. Federal Sierra Match King, 168 grains. Grab that one. And then if you're going to go up or down, stick within that range of bullet, right? Stick within the Federal Sierra Match King. Don't go get a Nosler, you know, 168 grain, because those bullet profiles are different between brands, right? I could buy the same 168 grain bullet across 4 or 5 different manufacturers, and they're loaded with different powders. They're loaded to different chamber pressures, all these small, subtle things that can impact the accuracy of that round. And I don't want to change so much stuff where it's like, oh, look at that. Well, what was it? Was it the ammo? Was it the day that I shot? Was it me? And in that same conversation, right, that again, that rifle is a living, growing organism. The more rounds I put through that barrel, that's going to change, right, as that carbon builds up and the copper builds up in the barrel. And that's when we start hearing things about like shooting out a barrel or a rifle has been shot out. Again, this takes many, 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 many more rounds than as you're learning. But it's something to consider that the conditions that I'm shooting in, if those are changing drastically, then so too will the trajectory and the impact of my bullet.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Hey, listen, Mike, I know we don't have a lot of time to go into like the how to shoot sort of like that sort of training. But once someone has their rifle, they've chosen their base model, they've got a few things to help them, you know, accessorize and get more accurate, gain more distance. What are the next steps for somebody that is, you know, they're trying to get the feel for it and they want to begin learning, they want to get more accurate at longer distances? What's your recommendation for them to kind of start that next stage after they have their equipment and gear?
I think you hit the nail right on the head when you said to get the feel for it. That's probably number one. It's just shoot. Start shooting. Get a feel for your rifle, right? I feel that the best way for me, and again, we have, you know, visual learners and tactile learners and people who can read a book and understand and process everything, right? But for me, I'm a tactile learner. I got to do it. I got to get behind the gun, see what it feels like, see what I'm doing, and be mindful, right? So just shooting is the best way to learn, in my personal opinion, as a start. But not just out there making expensive noise, right? Be mindful of what you're doing. Be cognizant of how things are feeling. Focus on the process that you're executing and what that result is that process is yielding. Don't look at where we see this all the time, where guys will get behind their gun, bang, and then they'll look up over the scope looking for the hole. The hole is the end result. The hole is the result of the process that you did behind the rifle. Focus on that. And then understand what that result was that process yielded. Don't worry about down there. If I'm all over the place over here, I should probably be all over the place down there, right? Number two, I definitely, you know, get some books. I'm going to do a couple of name drops here. But the Long Range Shooting Handbook by Ryan Kleckner is probably one of the most popular, most common books that we see from all of our students. I think YouTube can be a great resource. You just got to take it with a grain of salt. Again, there's a lot of stuff out there on the YouTubes that is just utter garbage. One of my favorite is the modern day sniper, Philip Vallejo. He's an Scout Recon Marine, precision rifle shooter now. But the modern day sniper, they've got some great stuff on their channel. And then I tried and sort of go down the rabbit hole gently in the YouTube world, where it's like, all right, who is also, you know, who is Phil talking about, who are the names that he's mentioning? Who are the channels that he's talking about? And then sort of branch your way down that rabbit hole. But I think those are two really good ones, the Long Range Shooting Handbook and then Phil Vallejo. And lastly is take a class. You know what? I think that I know when I took my first class, I was, you know, a little intimidated and this isn't necessarily for me and I don't know. And there's only so much we can learn watching and reading. But to go to someone who has the expertise, who has the knowledge, and not only has the knowledge, but can relay that knowledge. I know lots of phenomenal shooters who are atrocious instructors, right? Who just can't teach. Teaching in and of itself is a good skill set, is an important skill set. I need to be able to relay that knowledge that I have. And that's one of the reasons that I like Phil Vallejo is he's a really good teacher. He's really articulate and can make these very, very complex processes make sense. And I think those are probably the three big things. So read, take a class, and just get out there and do it. Have some fun.
You bring up an important point, I think, because especially when you're looking at long distance shooting, the people that go to the range, even especially probably if you're a newbie, it seems to be intimidating. Like there's other people around, like you don't want to set the target to, like you want it to be 1,000 yards out. So you start 1,000 yards out and it's like, you might have a spotter or something like miss, like a little bit. But when we were in the military, we zeroed the rifle in close because we know the trajectory of the bullet also, right? Like, so we mm-hmm. know where if we zero it at certain distance, then it's going to go up and it's going to come back down at that same exact spot sort of at another certain distance. So it seems like it would be good advice for people to not think about long range shooting as in learning it by just setting a target out 1,000 meters out and starting to plink away at it, trying to get everything down. So would you recommend that, like what distances should somebody start at with a rifle to really try to get their skills down?
Yeah, and so what you're talking about is ballistics and trajectory and all that stuff. Again, I am a huge advocate for knowledge and learning, and I'm all about the whys. Like, why does something happen? Why does this do this way? The more you can understand about ballistics, the easier it's going to make the shooting process. As far as the ranges and zeros and things like that, the most traditional, common, and again, this, you know, take this with a grain of salt, is going to be your 100 yards or 100 meters. There are plenty of hunters out there who zero at 200 or 250 based on their ammo and their rifle and even the game that you're hunting, right? I'm not going to make an ethical kill at 1,500 yards, you know, shooting a, you know, 270 Weatherby or something. I don't know. I'm not a big hunter, so I don't speak that language. Mm-hmm. Some limitations are also applied by where you can shoot. Right. I'm fortunate enough out here to have a few ranges that I can shoot out to 1,000. There are very few places that I can shoot beyond that. Ghost Ring is one. We're actually putting up a target at a mile. That's my next goal, is for me to be able to throw a 6.5 Creedmoor out to a mile. So I think that the 100 yards is very, very common. I think it's it should be, you know, easy is a subjective word, but easy enough to find some places that can zero to 100. But if all you got's 50, then yeah, get out to 50, zero it out to 50. And here's the thing too, is that everything that you do to hit your target at 100 yards is exactly the same thing that you do to hit your target at 1,000 yards. It's just a different wind call. That's really all that it comes down to. The process, right? We talked about that process behind the gun. My trigger press and my eye relief and my posture behind the rifle and my positioning. It is exactly the same at 100 yards as it is at 1,000 yards. And I think some people don't realize that, right? We get so focused on like, oh, I need 1,000. Oh, I need a mile. Oh, I need 2 miles. It didn't matter if I was shooting a target at 25 yards. I'm doing the exact same thing behind my gun that I would at any other distance. And that's that shooting fundamentals. That's the fundamentals of shooting, is the get strong and solid on the fundamentals. And then it'll, like you said, you gotta just get behind the rifle and the rifle does all the work. I might have to make a few little adjustments here and there in terms of wind and the environment. But beyond that, it's like brushing my teeth. I know how to brush my teeth. I don't have to think about brushing my teeth. I just do it.
Awesome. Awesome. Mike, I really appreciate it. This is a great primer for somebody that's looking to really start to get into it and starting off on the right step and getting the right rifle and showing up to your class with something that's made for that class. So that's awesome. I appreciate you taking the time today. Listen, everybody, Ghost Ring Tactical, we've had Nick Ryan's on before, and it's a great course out there. They've got barracks. I mean, it's quite an experience just to go out there and take a class. And they have a lot of different classes out there. Micah is the head instructor out there at Ghost Ring Tactical, and definitely check out their long-range shooting class as well as all their other training that they've got out there. You can go and check them out at ghostringtactical.com. And until our next show, live like a warrior.
You've been listening to the Warrior Life Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show. You can help us spread the mission of self-reliance and self-protection when you rate us. And leave us a comment wherever you enjoy these podcasts. And don't forget to check out our posts and videos on our social media channels. You'll see a full directory when you visit our website at www.warriorlife.com. We'll see you next time. This has been the Warrior Life Podcast. Prepare, train, survive.